and in memory of all the female doctors, nurses and orderlies who helped save lives in the First World War. August 1914. Your king and country need you. A call to arms. An addition of 100,000 men to His Majesty's regular army is immediately necessary in the present grave national emergency. Lord Kitchener is confident that this appeal will be at once responded to by all those who have the safety of our empire at heart. Terms of service. General service for a period of 3 years or until the war is concluded. Age of enlistment between 19 and 30. How to join. Full information can be obtained at any post office in the kingdom or at any military depot. God save the King. Chapter 1. Edie, August 1914. She fights them with everything she has, tooth and nail. So much wild energy fueled by terror. For a short while, she manages to resist them, begins to hope she might make it. But the trio of wardresses, all strong of limb and hard of eye, are too much for Edie in the end. They soon have her pinned to the plank bed, and now the prison doctor's face looms into view. "It will go easier if you just submit." The doctor, a young man with deep-set eyes, wipes perspiration from his brow, then rolls up his shirt sleeves in a manner Edie has come to dread. Sheened in sweat, skin itching beneath her coarse serge dress and thick black stockings, she is slowly suffocating in the stifling cell. The doctor wields his bottle of bromide, flourishing a tin spoon dented with the bite marks of Edie's teeth.
"Hold still now."
A dull, persistent ache throbs at the base of Edie's skull. 3 days without a crumb of food has left her too weak. The doctor's vice-like grip prizes open her jaws, and she is helpless to prevent the cloying sedative sliding down her throat. Choking, she renews her desperate struggle for release, earning herself a knee in the groin from one of the wardresses.
"Give it up, girl."
"Why are you doing this?" Edie wants to scream at the woman. "Why aren't you helping us fight?"
She's never understood why so many women seem content with the status quo. Some of suffrage's biggest detractors are fellow females, which Edie cannot fathom. As her strength wanes, a part of Edie's lucid brain is coming to the fore. If she wants to survive, she will have to play the doctor at his own game. She lets her body slacken, shorn head dropping onto the wooden bed with a thud, arms and legs completely inert. The wardresses continue to grip her ankles and wrists, breathing heavily, until the doctor tells them to step away.
"She won't give us any more trouble."
"Won't I?" At last they leave her, the cell door slamming. Edie drags herself up, then over to the slop bucket in the corner, a practiced finger down the throat, and a moment later she's vomiting up a thick brown mixture of bromide and stomach bile. Her tongue burns, but she feels cleansed. She lies down on the bed, turning her face to the wall.
2 weeks, Edie. 2 more weeks and then you're out."
She stares at the flecks of dried porridge, the remains of her rejected breakfast stippling the whitewashed wall, her tongue worrying at the ragged edge of a broken molar. Resilience has always been her strength, she tries to remind herself. She must draw on all her reserves now, suppressing the bite of animal hunger in her belly, turning her thoughts from her raging thirst, her stiff and aching joints. She inspects the bracelets of mauve bruises encircling her wrists, tentatively rubs the bridge of her nose. It's still tender, and she can breathe through only one nostril. Where there's breath, there's hope. Her mother's mantra comes to Edie now, and it lends her strength. Her body might be little more than bone, sinew, and skin, but it's whittled to an iron core.